Welcome to another in a series of interviews with Ben Jarofsky. I'm Dave Gloetz. Ben Jarofsky writes on government and politics for the Chicago Reader. He's here with me today. How are you doing today, Ben?
Very good. Thank you.
Good to hear. Today we're talking about your article that appeared in the Reader on October 25, 2012. It's called Whatever Happened to Storytime? Online, it has the preface, testing in a kindergarten. And in this article, you trace out how standardized testing has become sort of a monopoly on time in schools, using the example of a particular teacher who has the pseudonym Donna Reed in kindergarten is spending, she claims, at least a third of her time just on testing for these kids.
Yeah.
When you're talking about this teacher, you say that she must individually test all 30 of her students for comprehension of a story that she reads them, which sounds really time-consuming. Did you get a sense of what these kids are doing the rest of the time while she's doing that with each one of these kids?
They have this great, like, poker game going on, and when there's some little
craps game.
Was
that part of
game.
The gambling expansion?
Yeah, and then they're surfing the net for porn.
And that's going to pay for infrastructure, right? Very clever on the General Assembly's part.
That was a joke. Listeners out there in radio land or whatever this is, internet land, I think I had a little line in there. They're busying themselves with something or other. Or, you know, except they can't read. They're not reading. You know, essentially, it's wasted time. The whole thing is a travesty, in my humble opinion. It takes longer with kindergarten than other classes, obviously, because
they can read the test.
Yeah. So one of the interesting things, I'm on a tangent here, that I discovered while doing the story, and I did not know this, so excuse my utter ignorance, listeners out there, is that now we've shifted essentially as a society. I talked to actually two kindergarten teachers and a parent of a kindergarten kid, and now the expectation is that children in kindergarten learn to read. I did not know that, to quote Eugene Levy. 5 billion years ago when you were in school, you know, kindergarten wasn't so high stakes.
Did you go to kindergarten?
Yes, I did.
Did you go into kindergarten knowing how to read?
That was so long ago, I cannot remember, but I really doubt it.
I did.
You did or did not?
I did. I remember reading my first book when I was like, I don't know, 3 or 4.
Wow. Was there a candlelight that you were reading by?
A wood-burning stove.
President Abe Gloetz.
The book was Go Dog Go.
One of my favorite books.
A lot of people love that. My point is that that doesn't seem so extraordinary.
What's extraordinary is it's the expectation that children will be reading in kindergarten. As you probably know, we all develop at different paces. So while you were precocious as a child.
I like dogs.
Yeah, and you were reading at a very early age. Other people take a little longer. It doesn't mean necessarily that you're a greater human being than they are. It's just that that's how people develop.
But you're saying that there did not used to be an expectation.
You learning to read had nothing to do with education.
Right, that happened in my home.
It happened in your home. Your parents taught you. You learned on your own. You picked it up on your own. But the expectation now is that the schools will teach kindergartners to read. And I think that's a silly expectation because not all kindergartners can read at the same level and they'll develop at their own pace. Similarly, I didn't get into this. There was only so much space in the story, but they're also testing. I find this really interesting. Kindergartners for gym.
What?
Yes, I know. The reach test that I talk about in the story, which is, it's not really a test so much of the students. It's a test of the teachers. Is also given for gym. I think it's easier for people to realize how foolish that is because developmentally, people are wide array in terms of like disparity and how quickly they get coordinated enough to catch a ball or to run or just do a sit-up or some never overcome their fear of catching a ball. It's ridiculous to set an expectation for all children and put that expectation on the teacher in gym, and I would say it's similarly ridiculous to put that same expectation on a classroom with kindergarten teacher.
In fact, Diane Ravitch, who is an education advocate, talks about the fact that the biggest predictors of low test performance on the part of students has more to do with things like poverty, segregation, and conditions in the home rather than the teacher.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, the great Diane Ravitch. My problem where we're going with public education at this moment is that we're not even addressing the most essential important issues like the ones you were just raising, and we're just doing the easiest gimmicks. So the test craze that I write about is a gimmick that's attached to another gimmick, which is that somehow or other we can improve education if we get rid of bad teachers. So this test craze is a way to measure the good or badness of a teacher.
And it's enshrined in our national education policy.
That is correct, thanks to our president. I knew you would go there. I've been taking a lot of abuse for greenies in the last couple of weeks because I haven't voted yet, but I intend to vote for Barack Obama, and I want him to win, even though I am deeply disappointed with his educational policies and the mayor he sent to us. But I'm still going to vote for Barack Obama.
I'm sure we'll talk more about that some other time. You must have plenty of teachers who contact you and say stuff like, wait till you hear this one. You know, and that's, you know, but what essentially this story is based on. Yeah. You want to talk about some of the other ones that come to mind?
I just mentioned I didn't have enough space to write about the phys ed element of the REACH test. And I urge everybody out there to read the article as opposed to just listening to us talk about it, so you know more specifically what the REACH test is.
Which stands for Recognizing Educators Advancing Chicago.
Yes.
A well-assembled acronym.
Well, they worked hard on that. Yeah. They really reached hard. So I think that's really bizarre. Yes, I get calls all the time and emails all the time from teachers, you won't believe this. And I kind of don't want to talk about it now because I want to scoop myself.
Okay.
I've been getting a lot in the last couple of weeks about testing. That's for certain. So I'll probably return to this subject.
More gold to mine.
More gold to mine, yes.
You report that the General Assembly passed a law requiring teacher evaluation based on standardized tests so Illinois would qualify for the federal funds that we just alluded to under the so-called Race to the Top program. But you say that Illinois didn't get the money. Yeah. Why not?
Well, you know, Race to the Top, as I said, is a competition. So I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt and presume that it wasn't a fixed competition and that it wasn't politically doled out to the crucial swing states as opposed to a blue state where the vote for Obama was already guaranteed. So
you're saying it's not fixed.
Yeah, I'm saying none of that took place because it was objective. That's not how it worked. By the way, I think it's so bizarre that we have a competition for federal tax dollars that we, the people, here, we have a constitution always at hand, that we, the people.
He's waving the constitution.
Yeah, I'm waving the constitution.
Wait, I've got a flag here. You can wrap yourself in it.
We send them our tax dollars, and then they make us compete to receive them? I find that a little difficult to take.
So to take this to its logical conclusion, we should make the federal government compete for our tax dollars.
That is great. It's great. I hadn't thought of it that way, but yes. So I find that a very flawed program to begin with. But in any way, in order to successfully fill out the grant application to comply with some of the guidelines, we had to have some sort of teacher performance evaluation system in place, which meant coming up with some cockamamie test to test the teachers by testing the kids as if they all aren't being tested enough. And we did this in order to receive funding under the Race to the Top or whatever the heck they call it.
Correct.
And then we didn't get it. Why didn't we get it? I don't know.
Because other states are doing a better job of assessing teacher performance through tests.
Or writing grants. Their grant applications, or they have savvier politicians working Arne Duncan and the federal bureaucracy, or
their swing states.
Or their swing states. Combine them all together, Dave. And we did not get the money. So we're stuck with the law, all right? And we didn't get the money. And moreover, as I pointed out in the story, this is really worth pointing, I believe that Race to the Top and much of the general drift of Obama's administration on education issues is an attempt to sort of prove to Republicans that Democrats, too, will crack down on teacher unions. I think it's pretty clear that's Mayor Rahm's main educational goal, to show the world how tough he is on unions. And it doesn't work. The Republicans aren't convinced. They still bash the Democratic Party as being a wholly owned subsidiary of the teachers union. So I don't even know why they go through the pretense politically. I don't think they gain anything. They may gain a favorable column or two and hear from syndicated columnists, but I don't think politically they gain anything.
Hedge fund contributions, perhaps?
Well, yeah, I hadn't thought of that.
Prior to us talking today, you advised me to watch the speech that Diane Ravitch, who I mentioned earlier, gave at the City Club recently. And for those of our listeners who don't know, Diane Ravitch is a very outspoken advocate of the sorts of things that we've talked about with regard to not relying on standardized tests and as I said earlier, making the points that student performance is based on so many societal ills that so-called school reform don't address. And she was an official in the Department of Education in a Republican administration. So anyway, that's her cred. Why did you advise me to watch that?
Well, I actually wrote about that in a Reader blog post, which I urge all our listeners to read.
Ah.
I think that Diane Ravitch is really on target in her criticism of where we're drifting with this so-called school reform. So I probably say that because we see eye to eye. Isn't that interesting? But she very succinctly sort of encapsulates all these criticisms of school reform, and it's within quotes, in terms of the presence of hedge fund billionaires trying to profit from everything from operating charter schools, virtual charter schools, or making tests that they can then sell to various boards of education. And then she moves to talk about bashing teachers, how that's become sort of like a political scapegoat that politicians use to sort of rally up support without even addressing the central issues. And she keeps coming back to them, which is poverty and income and where you come from. She talks about education, it's just sort of like a very holistic way, you know, like the environment that a child comes from, the income that the family has, the amount of money that a community has to invest in its schools, the type of curriculum that the school has. And she has a historical perspective, so she'll compare the United States, where we are today, with where we were years ago, and comes to the conclusion that really things haven't changed that much, and yet there's this outcry that education is worse than it's ever been, or it's horrible.
If I may interrupt, at the City Club speech, she said that the current graduation rate is the highest and the dropout rate is the lowest in United States schools in 40 years.
Yeah, I mean, I find her fascinating because she's a historian. And so she takes this historical perspective. All these issues that are at play here with studying education, if you wanted to remove it from the political arena and as objectively as you can analyze them, that'd be one thing. But what we do is we take the worst aspects of public education, like the test scores, the disparity in test scores between schools in some neighborhoods and schools in other areas, high dropout rates, violence, and we use that to make political statement, or I always say a political club. So we're not having like a serious discussion about where we should go. We're not objectively analyzing anything. It's a free-for-all. So what I like about Ravitch is that she's not afraid to step in the face of conventional wisdom and criticize it and point out its flaws. I find that remarkably courageous, actually. I don't know anybody else who's doing it as publicly as she is on the national level. The piece I wrote, I credited Pat Quinn, Governor Quinn of all people, was the one who brought Diane Ravitch to Chicago. And I suggested that he was doing it just to needle Mayor Emanuel. You know, they have their little feud.
Until the mayor approves his pick for the Illinois Sports Facilities Authority.
Yeah, so until then, he's going to keep bringing Diane Ravitch to Chicago. By the way, I called the governor's people and they said, absolutely not. He did not bring Diane Ravitch to Chicago to needle Mayor Rahm.
You even didn't?
Though, yeah.
You
did?
Really?
I did, yeah. And they said, they assured me that Governor Quinn is a longtime fan of Diane Ravitch, has read her books. And coincidentally, curiously enough, there are no coincidences in life, I think. Governor Quinn also invited to hear Diane Ravitch speak and sit at his table, Karen Lewis. When he was introducing Ravitch, he gave Karen Lewis quite a little shout out. And the governor's people assured me that, once again, that shout out to Karen Lewis was not intended to needle Mayor Rahm Emanuel, even if it had the collateral effect of doing so.
Well, you know, all that stuff is definitely political. I can certainly see Quinn's people making sure he did that because of the very vocal and strident opposition from union members that he got when he went to the state fair.
Yes.
So, you know, he needs his union cred built back up.
Well, everything is political in the state of Illinois. So whatever motivated him, I'm glad he, Quinn, invited Ravitch to come to Chicago. I think that was well needed. I don't know if it got covered in the mainstream press. Did you notice if it did?
I didn't see it anywhere.
And you're my source for mainstream press coverage. I did not see it in the Tribune. I think there was a reference to it in the Sun-Times, but maybe I'm wrong.
On the description of this interview, I'll include a link to another speech by Diane Ravitch that I found online that I thought, well, she makes the similar points that I think our listeners would have an interest in. Well, that's all we've got time for. Ben Jarofsky of the Chicago Reader, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you, David.
If you've enjoyed listening to these audio supplements to Ben's columns in the Reader, follow us when we move to a new home called Inside Chicago Government, which will be a resource of a wide array of reporting on the antics of city and county officials. And I'll be giving details about that move in a future broadcast. Thanks for listening.